Welcome to the Trino Community Broadcast.
Hello and welcome again to another Trino Community Broadcast episode 67. We are 1 week late, but we are here.
Yeah, it's good to be back. We're happy to be here. It's always nice to be on the Trino Community Broadcast. It's a couple changes, Manfred. You have a new title. I have a new title. It's a little interesting.
I have a new title. I just do the same stuff. I'm a Trino.
Yeah. And it's the same Trino Community Broadcast as ever. So things exactly. Are, as much as things change, Manfred, they stay the same. So we're happy to be back. And
yeah,
and
you moved a bit closer, didn't you?
No, we're actually physically a whole lot closer to each other. I had previously been in San Diego. I'm up in the Seattle area now. So quick little boat ride, Manfred.
Yeah, it's good. We eventually will have to catch up again at some stage. But today we are here virtually, and we're also joined by Thomas Bestfleisch, who is joining us from Germany and is going to tell us more about Exasol and the Exasol Trino connector. But as always, before we dive into that, we want to say thank you to
our sponsor, Starburst Data, for helping to make the Trino Community Broadcast happen.
And most importantly, there is news in the Trino community, Cole.
So yeah, there's a lot happening. Of news, Manfred. It's been a while since we've had a broadcast, so there's a lot of releases to go through.
Yeah, we have weekly releases. It's been a month. How many releases do we have to talk about?
Was it four or five?
It's four.
Yeah, okay.
Four weeks, four releases, Cole. Come on.
I'm not writing the release notes anymore. It's a little harder to keep on top of exactly what's been going on.
Yeah, not to worry. Well, here is the release notes. I'm going to make this a little bit bigger so everyone can see. Well, not just me. So we got releases 461, 62, 63, and 64. And I have to say, they got increasingly cooler.
They really did. It's 461. You know, we only have this one bullet point for adding files and files from table in the Iceberg connector. And you can keep going. You have support for read operations with the Unity catalog, better CLI. With 463, there is HTTP2 for internal communication by default.
Yeah, this I have to say is amazing. Like, this was a long effort to get going. Props to Mateusz, aka Wendigo, on GitHub for making this happen. He has been working tirelessly on making it happen. And it's really amazing because we needed to go all the way down to, like, you know, low-level TCP/IP stuff and debugging with the Eclipse Jetty folks and all sorts of jazz. I don't know how many Jetty upgrades and Airlift Airbase upgrades he's gone through. Though I think the overall effort took like a year and a half or two, but it is solid now. Like, it's really nice.
Yeah, and HTTP2, it's just superior. So this is just strictly an upgrade. Communication is better, more secure, happier, safer. Massive win for everyone using Trino in every context, basically.
Yeah, and it also opens up the door to potentially even further improvements going down the line. Because as you know, like, you have a Trino cluster, there's the coordinator, there's the workers, and they talk to each other via HTTP2. Well, now they talk HTTP2, and that also can potentially mean that they leave the connections open. So rather than saying, hey, worker X, I have a message, and then negotiation, blah, 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 sending data, it's just like we have a channel, And so there's potential to make it even more efficient and better, but it's already more scalable just by using it and stuff. And it's been used in production in like various cases already. So definitely useful. If you have any problems with that, please do let us know. It can be disabled, but by the design by default, and honestly, you shouldn't notice anything, just that it's better and more stable now.
Yeah, it's just mostly you shouldn't notice it, right? But it is superior. So, you know, it's like these small things make a better product, even though you don't feel them immediately. But it's like sometime down the line, it will matter one time in a big way, like millions of dollars away. So
definitely
for one company, one time when this is actually relevant. Any case. We added time zone functions. Those are always fun. I always like to quip about how time zones and timestamps are a software engineer's nightmare.
Well, there's a special nightmare recently, right? Like, there's a time zone database update that changed some time zones, like in political time zones that were wrong in the past, and now they're right. But that means that the queries return something else than they used to be before sometimes, potentially. So it's like, oh, great. But Yeah, those, that time zone function is actually, it's kind of two functions with different input materials. The funny bit about that was we had everything. Like you could take a timestamp with time zone and get everything out. The date, the year, blah, 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 but not the time zones. It's like one of those oversights. And somebody in the community stepped up. So thank you for contributing that.
And we have include table functions with show functions output. Manfred, can you explain that to me?
So when you go show functions in Trino, it lists all the functions.
Oh, but it doesn't list the table functions, but now it does.
But it didn't show table functions, right? And we're getting more and more table functions. What's the difference between a function and a table function? Well, a function just returns a number. Like, you know, the time zone function here, for example, will return the three-letter acronym for the time zone in a timestamp.
Sometimes they can return an aggregate as well, but a table function, rows and columns, an entire table.
Exactly. And now these are included when you go, like the show function is kind of like, what can I even do? What are my functions? What's available? And it's useful because it shows the description and the output values and that kind of stuff. And now it includes the table function. So we're not hiding that they exist anymore, basically.
And then we have support for writing change data feed when deletion vectors are enabled to the data lake connect or Delta Lake. I said data lake, Delta Lake. It's a data lake.
Yeah, it's one of those signs that, you know, both the Iceberg Delta Lake connector, they're constantly innovating a lot and it just keeps going. So
yeah,
it's a good one.
It's easy to forget about Delta Lake sometimes with how much Iceberg likes to be talked about, but Delta Lake is still a very valid.
I mean, come on, like what's the majority of users on Hive?
Yeah. So and Trino supports it all, so and pays attention to all of them. So no matter your use case, no matter what you're on, Trino is still improving all of these things. So
exactly.
464 Manfred, this is where we get to the your That's favorite the big one. Thing of every year is upgrading Java versions.
Yeah, every 6 months. And we were a little bit behind. We required Java 22 up to now. It already worked with Java 23 in like three releases, like one of those. I'm not sure, actually. One of those three releases or even earlier, we made the Docker container use Java 2023 and it's been working like really nicely. And we finally pulled the plug and now our developers can do cool things like no longer use HTML in Java docs, but use Markdown.
Yeah, it's better later Java versions, for those who are unaware. They come with language level compiler improvements that tend to increase performance a little bit. But they also come with language features and new ways to write Java code that make it better, easier, and faster to improve Trino in the future. So this is like an accelerator for Trino. It's the engineers have an easier time moving forward when we get onto later Java versions. And that helps make Trino better, faster. So benefits everyone.
Yeah, and in fact, it's funny. We submitted for Java 1 next year. So with a little bit of luck, fingers crossed, we'll be there talking about that a whole lot more because we are using like the foreign functions interface from Java 22. Like we're very much on the bleeding edge in the Java community and we are part of the early release testing and that kind of stuff for like, you know, real software with the JDK team. So it'll be interesting to talk about that. Hopefully, hint, hint, everyone over there in the Java community, our talk gets approved.
That'd be cool. So also three connector news items here. The faker connector for faking data or to represent the League of Legends player faker who's winning worlds on Saturday morning. There's like five people watching this who'll get that reference. It's the greatest of all time, Manfred.
The Vertica connector. I've been known to be able to fake things too, don't worry.
The Vertica connector has been added and the Accumulo connector, which it was cause for great celebration. I was not aware it was as much of a pain point as it has been, but it's gone now. So if you were using Accumulo, we're sorry.
Yeah, special shout out to Yuya for getting the Vertica connector in. It's been a long, long slog, and we've been like working with Microfocus/Vertica on getting licenses suitable for the open source project and all kinds of stuff. And ultimately, thank you to, I don't know, I think like 100 and something contributors on that plugin because Starburst actually contributed a connector and it's been used for quite a while in Starburst. So it's a very solid connector. And thank you again to Starburst for contributing that connector. And we're looking forward to work with the Vertica community to get it even more improved. So that's really cool.
Yeah, and what was the deal with the Accumulo connector? Was it just a pain to maintain and no one was using it, or it didn't work that well, or?
Yeah, it's not been improved and updated for a long time. The Accumulo project is also kind of like lingering, and the original contributors have long abandoned using Accumulo. We looked around and asked around in the Accumulo community, in the Trino community, and customers and users. No one seems to be using it, and it carries quite a bit of weight with it. So we're like, So we got rid of it. The biggest negative impact for me potentially down the line is that it's one of the example connectors that has a whole kind of like conceptual documentation and explanation in Trino the Definitive Guide. So if I ever do another revision of that book, then I'm going to have to rewrite that whole chapter.
pick a different connector. I mean, yeah. It's worth updating if we need to go that route, so...
Yeah. It's a lot of late nights, though, so we'll see.
And then, of course, it's worth calling out that every Trino release has lots of small performance improvements and bug fixes. You can go check the release notes yourself. These are just the highlights. There's much more going on behind the scenes. You're going to have to read the actual release notes for that. And even beyond that, there's a lot of things that aren't documented in release notes in the first place. This is only, 20% of the work that's been done. A lot of
changes. Yeah, you can see, like, here's the 464 release notes. Each one of them is linked in the in the show notes here as well. So we had some other things where we missed you, Cole.
Yeah. I missed a couple calls.
Yeah, we had a maintainer call, like some really exciting news that I can't share yet, but I will share as soon as I can share them. happening. So it's really exciting what's going on in the Trino community. One of the discussions also, we had a Trino operator meeting, a kickoff meeting to decide or talk about what people want to do with regards to having a Trino operator for Kubernetes, which is different compared to a Helm chart. It's more active, but also quite more complex. So we're not sure yet what we're going to do, but there was a very lively call to kick this off. We'll see where this goes. And we had a contributor call where, if you look at the minutes here, lots of things were discussed, right? And all the timestamps for the video can also, like, you jump straight to it. So hopefully helpful to find out more about it. And then last but not least, we closed the call for speakers for Trino Summit. And wow, thank you so much, everyone in the community. We got a lot of submissions and really good ones too. So it's going to be super exciting to have Trino Summit happening in December. So don't forget to register, right? Like, everything is ready right on the front page in the Trino website, right? Like, you go to trino.io and you go to register right here. So make sure you do that. It's going to be a cool show, and you'll be able to ask the speakers questions while they are presenting and afterwards and stuff like that. So it should be really good.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's going to be great. And it's virtual, right? So it's free and virtual, so easy to attend from your couch or wherever, your desk or whatever.
Yeah, and I would say attend live, because then you can ask questions and get answers. But
yeah, exactly.
If you can't, every talk gets uploaded to the Trino YouTube channel after the fact. It's going to be weird to not be the one doing that.
Yeah, well, someone else, you are, you don't know that yet.
That's been my job for the last 2 years.
You might be that one again, who knows.
Oh man, okay, I'll do it after hours. Yeah, we can, for the benefits of open source, Manfred.
Exactly, that's how it goes. But now we are stopping talking about Trino, and we should go and get Thomas on. All right, we have Thomas on now. I'm going to stop sharing this for now. Thank you so much for joining us today, Thomas. You are over in Germany. We just been chatting German before Cole jumped in. So that feels kind of odd to me all the time, but it's very good too. Tell us more about yourself and Exasol, Thomas.
Sure. So I'm Thomas from Exasol, working there since quite a while. I started there as a developer doing like the SQL editor for Exasol back in the days, and then I did also a lot of solution engineering POCs, and now I'm in product management, and my core focus are the integrations that work with Exasol, so like Power BI or other ETL tools, Tableau. Yeah, but also we contribute a lot into open source projects, and also like Trino, we have customers that use Trino and Exasol together, so they wanted to have a connector, and then we worked with Trino to get this connector. Yeah, and today we are happy to present it to you, and I will also give you an intro into AccessAll in general, what we are doing.
Awesome, that's great. Basically. So the connector landed in Trino 452, so it's been there a little while, and let's tell us more about AccessAll. Do you want to use your presentation to roll with that?
Yeah, that would be great, yeah. So today I want to talk about better together how Trino and AccessAll can optimize your data analytics stack. Just a little bit about myself. So I already did an intro, a quick one. But besides all the computer stuff, usually I'm in the mountains all of the time whenever I get the possibility. So that's me. Just 2 weeks ago, I was in the Italian Alps doing some mountain biking. And I want to give you a very quick intro now into AccessAll in a minute. I don't want to do a sales pitch, but just very briefly what we are. So we are building a very fast analytical database, of course, the world's fastest, but many other engines also tell this. We have proved it back in the days with TPCH benchmarks. You can think about benchmarks what you want. Anyway, it's still a blazing fast engine. We have more than 20 years of experience. We started as an accelerator for Oracle, so one of the biggest German retail companies at that time used AccessAll to accelerate really huge Oracle workloads. At that time, we also even had clusters like with 40, 50 nodes. I don't know, this was beginning of 2000, 2003, 2004. We currently have 200 plus employees. We went public in 2020. And basically, AccessAll has built a hybrid in-memory columnar analytics architecture. I will talk about that in a minute later. And what we want to give our customers is a very low TCO. We also claim to be quite tuning-free. There's not a lot of things that you need to tune. It's quite self-tuning. You can deploy us anywhere, like Trino, so from on-premises to different clouds. And we also provide the possibility to also do machine learning at scale using our UDF framework. You can see some of our...
That's very impressive. You mentioned TPCH and the fastest database. We have to dig into that a bit more. you've been the fastest in the TPCH benchmark for quite a while, from what I understand. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. But if you don't repeat those results, then you get back into the archive. But we participate there, I think, since 2009 or even longer.
Yeah,
I don't know
the
exact date.
Wikipedia is like, they've been number one every year for the last two decades. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, but then, what happens then is at some point also the competitors didn't participate anymore. So basically now that there are no TPCH results anymore, not many. And also it looks like also the market now is more switched into TPCDS, but there's also not a lot of participants. But benchmarking is a very controversial topic.
Maybe you should just test it yourself rather than relying on a benchmark that can be fuzz.
I agree on that. Take your own workloads, take your own queries and
it's a bragging point, so yeah.
It is. Yeah.
I mean, it's still an interesting point, though, because on the Trino side, we have the TPCH and TPCS connectors, which are basically data generators that people can test the queries and stuff like that. And I know we compete with a lot of other query engines that can't even run the queries because they don't have the right SQL support. And I think Trino is one of the engines that actually can run all the queries, and I'm sure AccessAll, being around for so long, is also one of those engines that can actually run all the queries and is fast at it. So I think that's a good point when you look at other engines that are not that mature. So it's good to know.
It is.
And
it
yes,
is.
But
reality looks different. I mean, if you have looked at queries that generated by let's say tools like MicroStrategy, they have thousands of lines of SQL with very complex window functions in it. So that's usually just another level than those artificial benchmarks, to be honest. Because also time, things like compile time also play a major role, if you think about that.
Mm-hmm. So how does AccessAll achieve all that? You mentioned something about in-memory and Colmar. Maybe we'll talk about that a little bit.
But first, maybe I just wanted to show you a quick video. to just see it. I don't want to show you a benchmark, but that's more realistic. It's a Power BI dashboard, and I will just switch to the video, and maybe we can talk about that while we watch the video, right?
Yeah, sounds good.
So, probably you cannot hear the sound. I think this doesn't work with the StreamYard. Anyway, what you can see here, you have four exact dashboards. You can see XSL, Redshift, Snowflake, and Azure Synapse. And then someone just starts to click on the same drill down levels to drill into a city. The data set itself, it's a very common retail data set. So it's about 4 billion rows. It has one bigger fact table. So it's a classic star schema. You have products. And then you have different point of sales here in the US. So it's quite a common data set. And then you can see how different the different engines will behave. So you can see here, we start here on the upper left, XSL, selecting Georgia. Also at the other ones, you can also see that even the drop-down menu for other engines is a lot slower compared to XSL. So it's also about this interactive effect that you have with a fast database. So here we already drilled into the store in Dalton, and we could also now drill into the home category. So XSL here is ready now, and the other systems are still not even in drilling into the store details yet. So it takes quite a while. I also have to admit this video was done like 2 years ago. So maybe also the other engines have gotten better a little bit, but also XSL has gotten better. Anyway, so take this as it is, but we have seen this. I've seen this also in many POCs when we won against our competitors. So it's quite realistic, and it's not an artificial benchmark like TPCH, where every vendor basically is trying to optimize for. Yeah.
Cool.
And this is going on. I'm not sure if you need to see it until the end.
Yeah, no, I think just, that's good.
The point has been made.
As it is, because we can just wait like here, okay, at some point all the other engines are also ready.
Yeah,
I just wanted to give you a visual feeling how XSL behaves also in reality.
Yeah, that's cool. So we'll add that to the show notes so everyone can like experience for real. So you have mentioned like, we'll talk about how XSL is, how it's doing that. So like, let's have a look at that. That should be interesting.
Yeah. So the core of XSL is in memory based MPP database. Obviously all the data is stored in a columnar format. It's our proprietary format. We don't base it on something from the open source world. And it's also optimized for, it's not optimized to have maybe like the best compression rate, but it's optimized to get the best performance if you also process the data in memory. So we also work on the compressed data, and only at the last step, when it's really needed, we uncompress the data. So it's also very efficient how we use the memory itself. And not all the data needs to be in memory. So the system is automatically caching, let's say, all the hot data which is really needed into your query, and all the historical data can stay on disk. So this is also, this management is done in a self-tuning fashion. But self-tuning in XSL also needs that we also automatically create indexes. So we have indices. Some other technologies don't use it. They use different ways how to join data. And so if the first time like two tables are joined, we are building an index, and this is also done quite fast. So even if the data is on disk and there are no indices, the processing is still quite good, also compared maybe to other technologies which are purely disk-based. Apart from that, XSL is also standard compliant. Yeah, we also have it documented. So if you want to see all the details, which of the standard we support, it's quite good. We are also asset compliant, even on the serializable level, which is also quite impressive, specifically if you think that XSL is an OLAP database built for analytics. It's interoperable. So of course, we have JDBC, ODBC, and so on. We have different drivers from Node.js drivers. We also have our own virtualization solution called Virtual Schemas. So it's always, there are some overlaps with Trino, so we can also integrate with quite a lot of relational databases directly, but also load data from S3 in Parquet format. And it's also extensible. We have a UDF framework, and this UDF framework works with different programming languages from Java to Python. We even support R because R was quite popular in the past. And I think it can also parallelize stuff automatically on the different nodes. And it's also the foundation of what we have built for our machine learning frameworks. And maybe also something to mention, XSOL was built in C++ and also with quite a few assembler code in the core. So that's maybe also something to mention. But right now, we also want to make it more platform independent, and so it can also run on different CPUs. So it has its pros and cons. But yeah, back in the day, we were focusing really much on Intel CPUs and AMD CPUs and focus to get the best out of them. And XSOL runs on different platforms. We also now have our own SaaS offering, which you can also easily test out. And we also have a Docker version, so if you want to test it locally, this is also possible. So that's the core of XSOL.
Awesome. Do you have any questions? Ask a question here? XSOL is a full database, right? Like, so it has all the storage and all the, like, with it, right? So that's a bit different from Trino, which is a query.
It is, yeah.
What about, like, you mentioned it's in memory and MPP, so that's kind of similar, right? Like Trino has a cluster of machines, that's the coordinator and the workers, but obviously the storage, when Trino works with like a Hive system on Iceberg or so, is like not in memory. The processing is in memory obviously, but not the actual storage. You're saying for XSOL the storage is also in memory, like
no,
the
it's
actual
not
database, or
We store the database on disk. So if there is a commit, all the data is also getting committed to disks or SSDs. Or now we also have compute storage separation. So our proprietary file format is stored in S3.
It's not an in-memory database in the sense that everything is in memory. It's just in-memory processing.
It's different because the data that is needed by your day-by-day processing will stay in memory.
Okay, so it has like a hot in-memory cache sort of
yes
thing.
Yeah, so tier, and tier also storage. if you like, you could also say, okay, just load this schema into memory, so it's also possible to influence a little bit, but usually you don't need to. So if you look at many use cases, you have some date filters. Maybe the data from 2020 is just analyzed every now and then, so that stuff stays in disk, so maybe just the hot data from the last year. Or even it's also on a columnar level, so only the columns that are needed for your queries are in the main memory.
Okay, and it manages all that, like when you say MPP, it manages around a cluster of machines, but
exactly,
machine,
it's a
has
cluster.
Their own memory, basically, right?
Yeah, we don't have a coordinator node, that's also maybe a difference, so... Mm-hmm. All nodes are equal, so there's also no for some architectures also the coordinator could potentially be a bottleneck. That's not the case for XSOL. So if you connect, you're connected basically to the whole cluster one of the nodes is chosen randomly by the JDBC or by the drivers, so it's a round robin thing with node you are connected, but every node can do the compilation, for example, of a query. That's maybe also an architectural difference.
Awesome, that's very interesting. So what, like, maybe we'll go one step further then. Now, what got you to like integrate with Trino?
What got us here are a few joint customers that use Trino. They have built an in-house data lakehouse or a lakehouse, and they use Trino for certain workloads, but they still have XSOL for, let's say, the very fast analytics which they need with high concurrency. And so they need to have a way to also have an abstraction layer using Trino, but still are able to query XSOL or move data from
back
XSOL to Trino back and forth. So that's the main motivation to have this connector.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And I think this is also now in the future, I think now with the whole new separation of open table formats, we will see more and more engines just running on Iceberg. And I think that will also be our reality in the near future. So there will be more engines maybe optimized for certain workloads. So I think that's now a general trend anyway.
Yeah, that is the way. The world
that is the way. Yeah, absolutely.
It's move to Iceberg or an open table format or sink. It's the opposite of the Titanic, you know, where you hit the iceberg and then sink. You climb on board or else.
Yeah, exactly. I think it also goes beyond that in the sense that there's this trend, it's a long trend, right? Like the whole big data movement and stuff, where it's just an explosion of more and more data, where you just can't keep it all in memory, and there's just more and more and more and more all the time. If anything, this has accelerated now, right? Like what people used to call a big database, now it's like, oh, that's just a normal Postgres database. It's not even worth having a lake. And like lakes, on the other hand, are like when they get big, they're like in the petabytes and beyond. And then you have AI workloads now on top of them that get even bigger. So like the whole more and more data in open table format is seemingly just something that's just going to keep exploding, basically.
For sure. Yeah. Okay, maybe let's continue.
Yeah.
I just wanted to show you some of the architectures, how ExoSol is usually used. So here, quite often customers, they have some pain and they need to have a solution fast. So for example, they have a lake house or even a data warehouse, and then they put ExoSol just as an accelerator, we call it Espresso, between the BI tool and the data lake house and data warehouse. So that's one of the use cases where ExoSol is used quite often. And then
that's kind of like a BI tool optimizing caching layer, sort of.
It is, and also people could maybe also save on Power BI or Tableau server costs because they just use ExoSol as the in-between cache, which is more of effective and it can also scale better than maybe the internal formats that you find in Tableau or Power BI.
Yeah, it's always a good time
when going faster means saving money because you're just doing less work overall. That's usually when it's truly just great.
That's great, yeah. That's the value proposition. If you don't save money somewhere, as a vendor, I think so. I agree. Yeah, and then people also start to realize that ExoSol is also quite good as a data warehouse. So we can also be quite effective, for example, with merge statements, inserts, updates on huge tables. So we can also accelerate that stage. And so also people start to build maybe a data warehouse using ExoSol. So that's...
goes a bit beyond that's kind of similar to how Trino goes beyond the analytics workspace and does more and more. ExoSol is in a similar phase, I guess.
Yeah, usually we start coming into a company solving a problem, a performance or problem or a performance / price problem, and then maybe people realize that they can also do many other things using ExoSol as a technology. Yeah, so now let's talk about the ExoSol connector for Trino. So what does it currently allow you? So it allows you to query ExoSol from Trino right now. It's read-only, so write-back isn't possible at the moment, but we will continue into that. There's also documentation about the connector, and here you can see an example. So I used Dynamic Catalog for this. And it's quite similar to any other relational database. You need a connection string, a username, and a password.
What you see there also, which is for people that are aware of how Trino works, it's a JDBC-based connector. So it basically uses the JDBC protocol to go and connect to ExoSol.
So I've also prepared a very small little demo here. So I'm running Trino here on Docker on my local computer, and I executed exactly the statement here, and then now you can see I'm connected to that's a demo system from us with quite a lot of data. There's also a TPCH 1 TB schema in there, and then below I just want to demonstrate you very quickly. So it was 0.1 second to execute this, so just to give you also feeling how XSL really behaves without just showing a video. That's TPC EH query one, and it's really delivering the speed. So it's not just marketing stuff. Okay, jumping back to our slides. What I also want to give you an overview is like better together. So what would be use cases where Trino plus XSL deliver great value to a customer? So one of our customers using Trino to query really large data sets stored in data lake houses, like in Iceberg format. And it also might be distributed across different storage formats. And then they use XSL on top for the high performance SQL analytics to process analyze the results from Trino queries. So that's quite a common use case. Also, if you look at data warehousing, you can use Trino to build. First, you have all the raw data, maybe also semi-structured data in JSON in your data lake, or maybe also different storage systems, maybe also on-prem systems. And then you can use Trino to build the data warehouse structures. And then maybe you have specific data marts that you need to accelerate. And then you could use XSL as a gold layer. And then the BI tools are hitting XSL for specific mission critical dashboards, or also for ad hoc analytics.
Yeah, that's cool. So you can sort of like pick and choose, right? Like with Trino being open mm-hmm. source, obviously you can like save the cost on running your massive warehouse with Trino, and then pick and choose where you get the performance and where you need it, and like even shift back and forth workloads potentially, since XSL and sure. Trino both have good SQL support. That's really cool.
Yeah, that's also a possibility for sure. Yeah. And the other use case I also want to mention is machine learning and AI. So Trino could be used for the whole data preparation things. You have diverse data sets. Also, unstructured data where XSL is not that good, then Trino. You process the data for model training, and then you could use XSL's parallel capabilities and also in-database capabilities to do the model training and also do the predictions on maybe billions of rows using the in-database functions that we have for machine learning. Yeah, so that's one of the other use cases I just want to talk about today. We also have an open source AI lab. So if you want to try out XSL and the AI capabilities, you can also find it on our GitHub account. We can also maybe share a link later. So that's also, it's built on JupyterLab, and it really shows you the capabilities that also XSL has in the ML space.
Awesome, cool. So I have a question around the like memory kind of stuff. So I think, tell me if my hunch is wrong, but I think memory heavy servers used to be ridiculously expensive. Like you were saying, like long ago when XSL started long ago, right? Like back then they used to be like massively expensive. Now they're still expensive, but they're, I don't know, in like price performance comparison, they're probably like less expensive than they used to be. So being in memory kind of is definitely something that helps, right?
Yeah, indeed. So interestingly, yeah, that's also like a bet that XSL did in the past, that memory got cheaper. And that's also the reason, like in the beginning, we also had a lot of servers to get the memory. But just to give you a feeling, so we have a rule that is called like the 10% rule. So if you have maybe a data set of 10 terabytes, then usually what we see is that you as a customer need 1 terabyte of RAM, or even less. It really depends also on the workloads and the query patterns. Yeah, but that's true.
How does that work like practically? Like this is always one of those things, like you were mentioning, like it's MPP. So like what's a typical like sort of like cluster? Like is it like in the like 3 or 4 machines or 10 or 100 or more, or like does the memory sizing work?
We tend now to have less servers than in the past, actually. And some customers, they have like 2 terabytes per server. Then maybe only, and also now the modern CPUs, you have a lot of cores. Well, we have customers having 16 machines, and yeah, like with modern CPUs, you could easily get like an on-prem scenario 3,000 vCPUs compared to a cloud environment. And we also have customers that have been into the cloud and then now move back to on-premise. So we also see this as a trend now a little bit, that the repatriation trend is real. So that's also happening. So also if they start to realize after they maybe have used the cloud data warehouse and got the bill shock, that maybe for some workloads that are very predictable, it can also be a big cost advantage to have a clearly sized cluster.
And just have it in a data center and buy the machine and then let it run and get it depreciated, basically.
Yeah. I mean, it depends what infrastructure you have and on many other factors. So, but it could be for the total TCO. Yeah, it could be for some workloads an advantage.
Very interesting. Very cool. So the connector is relatively new, right? Like it took a long time to get it in with the reviews and everything. But it was merged in 4.52. And as you mentioned, it's a JDBC based connector. So it's relatively simple in the sense of the features and stuff. So what's your plans going forward with that? Obviously you were talking about customers. So what do you see in the future for the Trino connector?
Well, I think we need to work on the capabilities to get better pushdown support first, and then also think about how we can make write support happen. So I think those are the next steps that we also talk about internally.
And hopefully we here at Trino can make that a faster process.
That would be great.
It's worth saying, like, this is a transparency moment on behalf of Trino, is open source is hard sometimes. Like getting that connector in was not a simple, easy, fast process. And that's the reality of open source on occasion. But you know, it's one of those things that as a community and as a maintainer team, whatever, you can always improve on. I want to say thank you to Exasol for being willing to go through that process.
Props to Christoph also for maintaining like the contributor working on this, for persisting and getting it in. I think we also have some interesting things on our like horizon to potentially get JDBC drivers to be more parallel. And obviously the advantage of it being an open source project is, in order to implement the pushdowns that you want to implement, you can just look at the code base for the Postgres connector and kind of like lift and shift things over. It's going to be very similar, right?
I think enabling them is not the thing, but you also have to implement all the testings and the tests. I think that was the issue, that because also some of the tests also you need to have write support first until some of the tests also work like for join pushdown and things like that. So there was kind of dependency. I don't know if this maybe changed in the meantime.
I think people that say testing is half the battle are underestimating how much of the battle testing truly is.
Yeah, I mean, that's what also caused some, like in order for a connector to get into Trino, it needs to be able to be shippable as an open source project, right? So if you have a proprietary JDBC driver, well, that's good luck to you then, right? Like, good thing is that Exasol figured that out and got the JDBC driver so that anyone can use it without restrictions, which totally is makes sense anyway, because what are you going to do with a JDBC drive if you don't have Exasol for
it doesn't make any sense, right? To be honest, I think for any vendor to have the JDBC driver should just be easily distributable. Otherwise, I mean, it makes your life even harder, right?
Yeah, it's basically an enabler. Like, why would you not give it away?
What can it do with a JDBC driver alone without a database? Nothing. So.
But yeah, no, that's really cool. So I'm looking forward to your next plans and maybe hear from your customers and see how they go. It would be very interesting to see what Trino enables for them, and obviously the shared future of working with table formats like Iceberg and Delta Lake and all the fun with all the different catalogs is gonna be something that's gonna keep us entertained for a while going forward, I think.
Sure.
So where can people find more out about Exasol?
Well, the easiest way is to Yeah, from the show notes, or you could just visit xsol.com, or also have a look at our GitHub repositories. I talked about the iLib, but we could also share some links later how you can test it out. We have also a Docker container available. So there are many ways to test XSL.
Awesome. I think that's great. Should be super interesting for people to play around with and enjoy the blazing fast speed from XSL without having
Thanks
to
a lot,
turn
Manfred.
Many knobs.
Thanks a lot, Manfred, for the opportunity to be here on stage today. And yeah, looking forward for the collaboration.
All right. Yeah. Thank you again for joining us. We are going to round it out a little bit, but thank you again for joining us. And the notes will go live, and hopefully we'll find out lots about happy users with XSL and Trino.
Yep. Links and all that you need to go explore will be embedded in the show notes on the Trino.io website. So make sure to go check that out.
Cool. We got something else to talk about, Cole.
Well, it's we hinted at it earlier, but it's we need to emphasize that it is happening, I believe.
What's happening?
It's Trino Summit, Manfred. It's the largest Trino event of the year.
I totally forgot about that. Yeah, no, I didn't. It's just one of those things. I'm just so rotating and freaking and busy that it's like, in preparation for Trino Summit, not only do we have to create the keynotes and get all these other things in, we have all the sessions. Proposals, we have to select them. We are going to put together a very interesting panel, by the way, as well, so that should be super exciting. And Martin, Dane, David and myself also are going to do two little secret base camps before you get up to the Trino Summit. So next week Thursday we're going to talk a bit about, like, you know, Lakehouse specific Trino SQL support, and then 2 weeks later we'll talk with Martin about some advanced SQL for general usage. And then 2 weeks later, can you believe it? It's already Trino summertime. So it's literally
it's approaching
like,
so fast.
It's literally like 5+ weeks away. So I'm like, I don't know how this is going to happen. But
suddenly it's soon. And you, like, reviewing talk submissions, you got to get the agenda finalized. There's a lot that goes into making these events happen that you don't see. You know, it's if you're just attending, it's like, okay, well, there's an agenda and I guess I'll go watch. But there's so many moving parts. So it's always a flurry. The SQL base camps are also super cool. If anyone hasn't seen it, so we did the SQL training series before, or the Trino training series, or whatever we called that. SQL Basecamps is a better brand, Manfred. Whoever came up with that.
That was me, sorry.
Give them a pat on the back. it's truly, you get to learn about SQL from the people who are implementing it. So it's a great resource and a great way to learn more. I'd encourage everyone who uses SQL to go give it a look. I think especially if you're using Trino on Lakehouses, that first one will be super relevant to you. And then Trino Summit, of course, tons and tons of content, talks from everyone. It's a 2-day virtual event, so it allows us to broaden the spectrum of talks that we're looking for. I think for the first time, we've kind of said from basic to expert. Usually Trino events are intermediate to advanced. So we've gone from this to this, which means that there really will be something for everyone and you should be able to find a talk that's relevant for you.
Yeah, I promise you, I've seen the agenda. There is going to be some that are going to be pretty interesting and hairy.
Yeah, we like the advanced and expert, Manfred, but...
Yeah, we got to get down and dirty. Yeah, so I think that's it. Again, thank you so much again to Thomas for joining us. It's going to be the German evening for him soon. We are going to keep going on this day today and get those show notes live and all of you the video with timestamps so you can rewatch it and enjoy all the links and explore more. And if you need to learn more about Trino, also keep in mind that our sponsor Starburst has again made the extension to provide the Trino the Definitive Guidebook for free for you as a download from the website. So take advantage of that. And if you really want to have a hard copy, you can order it in English, but it's also available in Polish, Chinese, and Japanese editions. So learn more from the book and obviously the Trino documentation and more. And then to play around, use the brand new Faker connector in Trino 464 from Jan. So I think this is it. Cole, anything else or are we good to go?
Yeah, I think we're good to go. Thank you all for tuning in to our live audience of very few people and our not live audience of an order of magnitude or two more. Thank you for watching. Go try out XSL. Make sure to attend Trino Summit, the SQL Basecamps, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Thank you for tuning in to the Trino Community Broadcast, brought to you by Starburst Data.